Infrastructure Strategies Committee will come to order. Missy, will you please call the roll?
Chair Payne.
Here.
Vice Chair Garrison.
Here.
Committee Whip Smith is excused. Representative Hunchowski.
Here.
Representative Andrade.
Here.
Representative Botana.
Here.
Representative Brackett.
Here.
Representative Buchanan.
Here.
Representative Cassell.
Here.
Representative Cheney.
Here.
Representative Escamani.
Here.
Representative Fabrizio.
Here.
Representative Gottlieb.
Here.
Representative Killebrew is excused. Representative Lopez is excused. Representative McFarland.
Here.
Representative Mooney.
Here.
Representative Nixon is excused. Representative Placencia.
Here.
Representative Robinson.
Here.
Representative Schoaf.
Here.
Representative Stevenson.
Here.
Representative Tomko.
Here.
Representative Trunell.
Here.
We have a quorum.
Members, by your presence, we have a quorum. I'll remind each of you to turn off your electronic devices and communication devices or place them on silent mode. Members, this morning we have a presentation by Secretary Perdue and Jennifer Marshall, and so we are glad to have them here. I'm going to steal a little bit of his thunder and just let you know that Secretary has led the department's efforts to build a safer, stronger, and more resilient multimodal transportation system. And I've had the opportunity to engage with him on numerous occasions and certainly appreciate those opportunities. And certainly he's a lifelong member, worked all of his life in the Department of Transportation. And any of you that want more information on exactly what the Department of Transportation does, go back and review the January 17th committee under Chair McFarland, and you'll find out additional information. But that committee prompted me to think about a few things that the Secretary said in the committee. When we're looking at transportation means throughout the state, often it starts with a community involvement or community input, followed by some environmental assessment or evaluation prior to design and certainly implementation. So, Secretary Perdue, thank you for being here. Jennifer, thank you for being here, and you are recognized, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Really appreciate the opportunity to be here. As the chairman mentioned, I've been with DOT my entire career, so anytime we get to talk about what we do, how we do it, and why we do it, I get excited about that. So thank you. I do want to take a moment to thank Speaker Renner and you, Chairman Payne, for standing up this very important committee. And we've already had a lot of interaction with Chair McFarland on her committee, and it's been very valuable so far. The topics we've discussed have been tremendously valuable. So thank you for that. Today we are going to talk to you about really the big picture of our environmental process that we follow. It's something that's been tried and tested for many, many years, and it involves a very comprehensive list and really narrative of sorts of how we actually conceive and deliver our projects. And you'll see there's a lot of stuff that goes into that. Today, here with me is Jennifer Marshall. She's the director of our Environmental Management Office. She's been at it a long time, and she does an excellent job and is truly an expert. So I think you're going to enjoy hearing from her and really digging into this process. You've probably heard the term NEPA. That's what she's going to be talking about, because it really encompasses everything that goes into planning and delivering a project that serves the communities we're trying to serve.
So, Secretary, if I can interrupt you 1 second. Yep. Members, I want to ask you to hold your questions to the end so he has continuity and consistency in his thoughts as we move forward. If you don't mind doing that, I'd appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So I just want to start out real briefly by reemphasizing what our mission is, and that it actually does inherently and at its very core involve quality of life, economic growth, but also preservation of environment and communities. So every transportation project we deliver, the preservation of what Floridians know and love is at the center of that. We take it very seriously, and even the members of our very own team, are passionate about it. And so it's part of our mission. It's important. And I know you'll probably see that passion come through as Jennifer talks with you today. As we're moving into the future, we have begun to evolve as an agency, and really it goes into the idea that when we deliver infrastructure, we know and acknowledge that it is going to have an impact on people, whether the new infrastructure that we build is going to impact a community or the actual construction activities themselves impact a community. And so we start with the premise that we know that, and we're members of these communities. And so communities have become the focal point. They're the center of everything that we're doing and really are becoming the central focus of our decision-making process. One of the things that's so great about Florida is we're a very diverse state. Every community has its own vision, its own character, its own desire for where it wants to go. And it's really not that complicated to make transportation infrastructure fit that community's vision as we move into the future. And so I just wanted to take a few minutes to show you kind of our compass of sorts of where we're headed in the future with communities at the center. Safety, workforce development, technology, and supply chain have become major focal points for our communities. These are the things that they really care about as I go on listening sessions across the state. And so we're including these things as part of our project development environmental process so that we make sure we're taking those into consideration. Obviously, resiliency coming off of hurricane season, resiliency is a very big topic, but communities were talking about that before hurricane season. And so, you know, the good news is we've been doing resiliency for years, and so, you know, we need to tell the story about what we do, but also begin to plan for the future of what that resiliency looks like for our communities. So we're doing a lot of great things. We have a tremendously large work program. It's continuing to grow. Many of you saw the governor's announcement, his proposal, for an additional $7 billion to be layered on top of our existing work program. And so we're very excited about that. So as we move into the future, engaging with and involving our communities and preserving what people know and love about Florida is going to be extremely important. And so with that, Mr. Chairman, I'm going to ask Jennifer to come to the podium and go into the meat of the presentation.
Thank you, Secretary. Mrs. Marshall, you're recognized. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for the introduction, Mr. Secretary, Mr. Chair, and members. Thank you so much for having me here today. My name is Jennifer Marshall. I'm the Director for the Office of Environmental Management. I've been working on transportation projects here in the state of Florida for 25 years. I know it's kind of hard to believe, but 25 years. And it is really an honor for me to serve in this position for the state, and it is a privilege for me to be able to share with you all of the wonderful work that we do here today. So I want to start by talking to you a little bit about the basis of what my office operates under. We operate under the National Environmental Policy Act, or NEPA. I'm sure that you've heard a lot about that. And there are really two main components to NEPA that are very basic. Number one, we have to look at the environmental effects of our transportation decisions and proposals, and then we need to inform the public. And that is at its absolute base. So from that base, we have based all of our federal requirements as well as our state requirements on looking at the environment, and we have plenty of room and flexibility to grow and enhance that. So Florida is one of eight states that has NEPA assignment, which means that we actually have assumed the legal liability and responsibility from Federal Highway for transportation projects that have a federal nexus here in the state. And we've had that since 2016. We just recently renewed in May. It is working wonderfully for our state. We are able to not only streamline our project development processes, but we're able to get more engaged in our community and get them more engaged in our process. And that gives us a level of transparency and helps us to build trust that's really excellent here in our state. We also have the opportunity under NEPA assignment to be the primary agency that's consulting with federal agencies for permitting. That's one of our responsibilities. So we're able to start to work to streamline those activities, but also, again, look for great opportunities. Now, Federal Highway does retain one responsibility here in the state based on our renewal. They do if a local agency receives a direct recipient grant from the federal government, typically through the transportation bill, then they retain those that they approve on their own. But we have an excellent relationship with our Florida division, Federal Highway, so we work together seamlessly to make sure that no matter what the project is for the state of Florida, that we're delivering it consistently and collaboratively. So with my office, we look at environmental effects, but really it's the project development process. And that project development process is an iterative process that lasts through the entire life of the project. When we begin in planning, we're going to start by engaging the public and agencies, developing some preliminary engineering concepts, doing that environmental assessment. We're also looking at environmental constraints and opportunities. So it really is a cycle that just continues. We start with a big picture and we refine down to something that eventually ends up in construction. And so really, you know, we want to make sure that we're avoiding. If we can't avoid, we minimize, we mitigate. But one of the things that I've seen over my experience working with the state of Florida is how we've really refocused to much more holistic transportation decision making. And we're looking for not only ways that our transportation systems avoid causing problems, but how can we actually enhance the communities? We also live in these communities. The people that we serve obviously live in these communities, so we want to make sure that these are features of their communities and not just gray infrastructure that's running through it. And we have really made a lot of progress in that aspect. I want to focus a little bit, though, on our environmental assessments. They are very, very intensive and cover a variety of areas. So in NEPA, when we talk about the environment, we are talking about the natural, social and cultural, and physical environment. So those are the three main areas. And then we have quite a few agencies that we are either required to or we are working with collaboratively to make decisions on our projects. I just want to highlight a few areas for you so you can kind of get a picture of how much goes into the project development process. Here in the state of Florida, we have such a sensitive and unique environment. So threatened and endangered species, wetlands, floodplains, our coastal resources are very key. That requires coordination with the Army Corps of Engineers, U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, the Florida Department of Environmental Protection, the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency, among some of the organizations that we regularly communicate with, in addition to the Coast Guard and the National Marine Fisheries Service. When we're looking at social and cultural effects, we very regularly and have an excellent relationship with the State Historic Preservation Office. We also have relationships with both of the tribes that are within the state, the Seminole Tribe of Florida, as well as the Miccosukee Tribe of Indians. We work with Federal Highway in our coordination with them for that nation-to-nation consultation. But we also work with Florida agencies such as the Department of Economic Opportunity, as well as the U.S. agencies such as the U.S. EPA. So we get all of their input when we're developing our transportation projects. Another area with social and cultural effects is we are very in tune to working with our local agencies, particularly our MPOs and TPOs that are really foundational groups and provide a wealth of information to us when we're going through that project development process. The physical environment, we're looking at highway traffic noise, contamination, and air quality. But then we go back to permits again and some of the permits that we're dealing with. One of the things that has been really interesting for us to go through is that Florida is one of two states to have State 404 delegation from the Army Corps of Engineers, and that's through FDEP. And we have been able to partner with them really well in a variety of ways that I'll talk about a little bit more later on how we're able to streamline that permitting process and really try to come up with some solutions that really benefit the uniqueness of our state. So as the secretary mentioned, we have a complete commitment to community engagement because it all starts with our communities. We need to not only know what their needs are, we need to know what their wants are, their priorities are, and how that we can help enhance what they're looking for in their communities. And we do that through collaborative efforts that begin early in our planning process and then again continue all the way through to construction because mutual trust and understanding between us and the people that we serve is critical for us to make sure we're doing improvements that really benefit our state. So one of the ways that we bring all of this together is through something we call the Efficient Transportation Decision-Making Process, or ETDM. And I apologize for throwing alphabet soup at you. I can't help it. I'm an engineer, and I work with NEPA. That's just how it goes. But ETDM is something that was developed here in the state of Florida. 20 years ago, it's been in use, and we are a leader nationally with this process. And essentially what it does is it brings a lot of technical information, GIS layers, et cetera, into one location for us to look at, and it engages our agencies right at the beginning of a project process so that they can have input into how we shape the project and then later how we implement the project, and the information that we have lasts for the life of the project. Because this is a computer interface, it's very easy for our agencies to interact with it, but also the public. So that goes back to that mutual trust and understanding that I was talking to you about. When we say something or we say that there are effects of a project, they can look online and verify what we're saying and also provide input for themselves on what's important to them. One major component of our ETDM process is our Environmental Technical Advisory Team. It is another alphabet soup thing. It's called the ETAT. And that's an interagency team of over 20 local, federal, and state agencies that we get together to review our major projects before we ever put them out on the street to get a consultant on board to help deliver that project. And this is, it's really, again, kind of revolutionary nationwide. That we have these dedicated reviewers and follow us through and provide us support through the project development process. And as the secretary mentioned, we have a culture of resilience, and resilience is really a part of the way we do work, and we're just expanding on how we're able to do more of that as conditions evolve and change. So it's integrated into our design criteria and procedures and the way that we're looking at developing our projects. We have layers for resilience, flooding, vulnerable communities, et cetera, all integrated into our ETDM technical layers so that we can do that screening through the life of the project at the very beginning, before we go into design, and as we move forward, continue to engage the appropriate agencies on how we're progressing as far as those elements go. So as you can see, the things that we're doing that involve the environment are a true holistic approach to how we do our project development. So I mentioned FDEP earlier, and I do want to highlight our partnering with this agency because they really have been a wonderful partner. We have monthly leadership meetings so that we can discuss potential opportunities from not only a conservation and permitting standpoint, but just from a standpoint of trails and recreation and how our two agencies can really work very well together, as well as if we have a concern that's coming up, we can be very proactive in addressing that concern. We have arranged for 4 reviewers within FDEP just to solely work on FDOT projects so that we know that's an increased workload that we have on them. So we've added those reviewers to their staff so that they can handle that workload that comes from us. That's been a great collaboration. And one of the things that I personally enjoy working with FDEP on is how we collaborate on some of the conservation efforts and our joint collaboration with the Florida Wildlife Corridor folks. It's really great because we've been able to look at the information that we have available to us from Florida Greenways and Trails, the Wildlife Corridor layer itself, the different conservation land layers, and we can see how those interact with our projects and see, can we add a wildlife crossing here that will help with some habitat connectivity? Or we have a project going here. Is this going to help you all move forward maybe with some of your discussions in acquiring different conservation land? So it's been a really excellent partnership, and I do want to acknowledge how wonderful their staff has been collaborating with us. So now I'm going to take a few minutes just to highlight some projects to really illustrate to you all how our decision-making process works. Pretty much put actions to the words that I've been saying. So one of our highlighted projects is the Wekiva Parkway. This is an excellent example of how we have put in that purposeful project planning, and really where we're putting preservation solutions at the forefront of also making sure we're addressing transportation connectivity. So this project began in 2005, and a long time ago. This project began back in 2005 with the intention of not only connecting traffic within the Central Florida area, but also making sure to provide connectivity with habitat between 2 major wildlife areas in Central Florida, but also to look at water quality and to reduce potential vehicle-animal collisions and increasing safety in the area. So we raised the roadway. As you can see in this picture, we've taken some of the piles out of the river so that there is a lack of construction influence, if you will, in that case. So we were able to provide a more open span. I actually have walked under the Wekiva Wildlife Crossing. There were deer tracks. I think bear tracks. I'm not a scientist, so I'm going to just assume that was a bear track I saw. Lots of turkey tracks. But it's so interesting to see how just in this expanse that the animals are moving freely between the areas. And the fact that we have all these multi-use trails existing on our transportation facility that are going to provide the opportunity to further connect to these wildlife areas in the future when the people that manage those areas want to connect to them. And then we can just increase the ability for people to engage in what makes Florida so wonderful, which is our natural resources. So I'm really excited to share with y'all that in my little orange vest, I loved being out there. But unfortunately, I did not see the turkeys firsthand. And not just from a project perspective do we look at keeping that kind of natural integration in the forefront. We also look at that from a regional perspective. So we have been working with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, Florida Fish and Wildlife Conservation Commission, as well as several NGOs to talk about how we're going to put together wildlife crossing plans for the state. And that's not just to benefit us on our state highway system, but also our local partners so that they're able to implement wildlife crossings where it's beneficial to them, as well as for our private partners and developers who can also help with habitat connectivity. We in the state of Florida have constructed more than 200 wildlife crossings statewide. We do have wildlife cameras that are available to us that point right into the crossings to see how the wildlife is using it so we can monitor the usefulness of those structures. And we have the ability to proactively determine where these crossings are going to go so we can make use of funding that becomes available, but also so that we can make sure that we are looking for those opportunities, again, as I mentioned, to enhance conservation efforts as we move forward. So I do want to highlight two wildlife crossings that we have. I've already mentioned the Wakaiva Wildlife Crossing. I am from Polk County, so I'm very proud to talk about the I-4 and State Road 557 underpass that's in Polk County that's connecting habitat that has been broken for over 50 years. And in this aspect, we are able to enhance the green swamp area that we know is a very sensitive resource here within our state. And so many of you may have heard that previously a bear was tracked going through Sebring, et cetera. I think it's M34. And it kind of got to I-4 and couldn't go any further. With the addition of features such as this wildlife crossing, it would be able to continue its natural trek through the state, and thus we're kind of helping to restore some of that natural connectivity. So that's really exciting, and I'd like to shout out to Polk County whenever I can. From another aspect, you know, I've talked quite a bit about our gray infrastructure, the concrete and the asphalt, but we also look at how our green infrastructure can enhance our transportation facilities, and especially in regard to our coastlines. So I want to talk a little bit about living shorelines. These are ways that we look at protecting our shorelines from wave activities and tidal activities, but that also adds an environmental element to help sustain and or restore the environment in some of these places. And I would like to give two examples. One is the Titusville Causeway that actually was done in partnership with Brevard County. We were able to look at seagrass restoration, which I'm sure many of you are well aware that seagrass has become very important to our manatee population. So we're able to do some seagrass restoration as well as restoration of the clam population in that area. Going to the other coast, we have the Sunshine Skyway wave attenuation devices, and we're putting those in really to, one of their primary focuses is to protect the seawall and erosion effects at the Sunshine Skyway Bridge. But also, this area can act, I guess you could think, more like an artificial reef, sort of, so that we're able to build essential fish habitat in the area, and again, really enhance seagrass restoration. And construction on this began in the fall of 2022 and is ongoing right now. So we are very excited to be able to add some of that green infrastructure into what we are doing. And my final example is the Tamiami Trail that we are working on in partnership with the National Park Service. And this is going to raise 8 miles of the Tamiami Trail to restore sheet flow to the Everglades. And This is a very exciting project. I was recently down in Miami this week meeting with the Miccosukee tribe to discuss this project and some other items that they wanted to discuss. And it was so amazing just to see how the first phase of this project that's already completed is already having such a positive effect in the area. And to have the opportunity also to coordinate with the tribe and hear their perspective so that we can further refine how our construction is going into the second phase has just also been a really rewarding experience. We're able not only to add some of the natural water balance and water quality that was originally there in the Everglades prior to having US 41 go in and acting as a natural dam, we really do. You can see how the wildlife is just moving so much more freely in that area. And it's really, again, I can't say anything other than rewarding to see how that works. We also have the opportunity in this project to work with the Miccosukee tribe to have some improvements made to their tiger tail camps to improve parking and safety in that area for people that are coming to not only, you know, who live and work around the camp, but also for tourists that are coming into that area. So I do want to thank you all so much for having me come speak today. I want to end with just one personal story. I had the opportunity to work on firsthand on the Sanibel hurricane recovery effort during Hurricane Ian. And I can tell you, being right there on the front lines of that work, we had safety and recovery for our citizens first and foremost in our mind, but riding right parallel to that was what can we also do to make sure that we restore and protect our environment that's going on. So I can tell you from the very first conversations we were having with contractors, with Federal Highway, with our agencies, we're talking about how do we also restore these mangroves? What does this beach restoration look like when we put this roadway back in? How can we make sure that we're going to continue to sustain this area for as much as possible? Our gray infrastructure lasted wonderfully, all the bridges. The causeways or the beach areas where the road was, those are a little more vulnerable. And it was very wonderful to hear and to be a part of a conversation where we're not just talking about, let's get that asphalt back on there. We're talking about how do we restore what makes Florida, Florida in this area so that by the time we get done with these permanent repairs, not only are people living the life that they used to, but they're able to enjoy what makes Florida special as well. Thank you all so much for having me speak today.
Mrs. Marshall, thank you for your presentation. Thank you for your testimony, and thank you for your all the efforts that we know that the Florida Department of Transportation put into being in the really devastated hurricane area. So thank you for that. Members, we're in questions. If you have some questions, and Representative Cheney, you're recognized for a question.
Thank you, Chair Payne. I am really proud as a Floridian to see how collaborative and comprehensive this process is. And thank you for your department for doing that. And thank you, Chair Payne, for bringing this forward. It appears that you all engage in the planning process at some point. And I know FDOT has long-term plans, five-year plans, 10-year plans. At what point do you all engage in that process?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Chair. We actually work in the early stages of the planning process. So our MPOs and TPOs that are looking at developing their long-range transportation plans have access to our ETDM process. They can screen projects, engage with agencies, and engage with us. So it can be really as early as the inception of a project that we begin engaging with everyone.
Follow up.
Thank you, Chair. Great. And it looked like on slides 16 and 17 that in addition to forward long-term planning, you do some kind of back-looking and provide solutions in areas that may need some environmental solutions. If that's correct, John's Pass in my district has some issues. He's grinning at me. This is not new information. Has some issues with the bridge that was put in there with beach erosion and shoaling. And I would like to know if someone in your staff can sit down with me and we can talk about that, and maybe you can help us with some solutions there.
Ms. Marshall, recognized.
Yes, we'd be more than happy to discuss that with you further.
Representative Andrade, you have a question?
Thank you, Chair. Thank you for the presentation, Ms. Marshall. I was curious, a lot of what's being discussed is very exciting, thinking about, you know, new innovative ways to make the transportation system, you know, more attuned to the environment around it. I was curious, as far as the existing infrastructure and maintenance programs for things like, you know, easements that address water runoff, removing silt from pipes that DOT installed, is there a program, or can you go into any detail about what the department is doing to make sure that the water runoff mitigation systems that have been installed in years past are operating to their full capacity?
You're recognized.
So we do work very closely with our maintenance group, and they are looking at more on how we can better enhance our maintenance activities. Aside, I guess, positive effect of some of our wildlife cameras is those kind of happen in some of those areas, and we get to see some firsthand views of where we can go through and make those improvements. But actually working with our maintenance groups, as well as our design groups, to do some better planning in those areas is actually ongoing.
Follow up? You good? Representative Hunchowski, you have a question?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'd just like to start out by commending FDOT on the community engagement. I was on our MPO. I was mayor of a city where we have, you know, roads that are being expanded and all the wonderful things that are happening in Broward County. And there was never a hesitation from anyone at FDOT to come out, engage, answer questions. Every time you were asked as an agency, you did that. And for those of us who served locally before we got here, that is so meaningful to our communities that they know that they have a voice in the process. Even if it doesn't all end up where they all want it, I just have to commend you on the outreach, because I think that's something you do exceptionally well. I saw on one of the slides, when you look at the environmental assessment, you're also looking at the physical environment and the social and cultural effects. In some of the areas where we have still substantial growth, substantial traffic, and there are expansions that have to be done that will impact the quality of life of people around that, could you just take me a little bit through the process that you go through in trying to find that balance of the need to transport people safely, but also preserving the communities that are surrounded by those areas?
You're recognized.
Thank you. That comes into making sure that we understand the character of the communities that we're working in on a project, as well as making sure that we understand the choices for transportation that they need to be able to make. So that starts off with making sure that we are engaging those communities right at the beginning of the project development process. And unfortunately, we can't be everywhere all at once, so we may miss some items. So that information gathering right at the beginning is very important. Through our ETDM process, we are able to look at, the letters for this, but I'll go ahead and say it. It's Bieber. We are able to look at census data so that we can look at the demographics of our area so we can come in a little bit more prepared. And then we want to make sure that we understand what are the needs of the people in the area. And not just from a transportation standpoint, it's you're building a community center here and you need to get children from one space to another. Do you have a seasonal residential population that you need to have some consideration for? So you need infrastructure that's available to them for when they come in. How many people have, where are the jobs located in that area? So do people have their primary mode of transportation? Is it a vehicle or is it transit? So then how do we need to make that connectivity happen? Those are an example of some of the questions that we're looking at when we're starting to develop a project. And what we need to do is make sure we start to get that documented. So if we have these conversations in the planning phase, it's going to move to the next phase in design, so we're not starting to repeat ourselves. And then if we have missed something because you know, you're in an area and there are nuances, we can make sure that we're building on those different areas. So I would say that we are doing, we're making a real concerted effort to get right there at the ground level with communities. For some communities that really have some very intensive concerns, we do very often form working groups. And that could be if you have historic structures that you want to maintain, if you have economic development that's interested in your area that you want to perpetuate. We put all of that information together so that we can see how the transportation solutions can enhance those plans as well. Did that answer your question?
Okay, no follow-up. Representative Botana, you have a question?
Thank you, Chair. Actually, this is a comment to Secretary Perdue and FDOT. Thank you for the bridge in Matlache in 3 days and Sanibel in 2 weeks and the other 10 bridges that you worked on in our community. We really do appreciate it. It was remarkable. So that's all I have.
Representative McFarland, you're recognized.
Thank you, Chair Mr.
McFarland,
Chair.
Excuse me.
Ms. Marshall, thank you so much for your passion and your service to the state of Florida. I've heard you speak at conferences before, and your passion shines through everywhere. Thank you for giving that to our state. I wanted to talk a little bit more about the planning process. Rep. Cheney started to touch on it. And I was hoping I could use an example from back home, not because I want specific case follow-up, but to help us think through the process here. So in Manatee County, we had a bridge over a small little river that was due for construction. Our counties prioritized it. It made it onto the MPO list. And it made it onto the DOT 5-year work plan. The initial design for the bridge was made, and we bid out the construction process based off that design. Well, then a little bit down the line, we figured out that the design would have put the bridge over some sensitive wetlands, so we had to do a redesign, which took us back in the process, both financially and timeline-wise, neither of which are good to the residents of Manatee County. In the end, we got a great bridge that protected sensitive wetlands, but it set us back in ways that feel like it could have been avoided. So maybe if you could use the bridge, just because I think a lot of us think in stories, but where in the planning and funding and design process do you guys insert yourself, or do you have to wait until an MPO invites you to be inserted into the process?
You're recognized.
Our information is available to the MPOs at the inception. Once a project is prioritized, we'll do a cursory review of that project. But really, once the project goes into an official study range, does my office get involved? So that would be what we call a project development or environment study. And that follows all the tenets of NEPA. What can happen over the course of the planning process is it can take many years, and then laws can change over that time. That's something that we're actually trying to work on monitoring a little bit more of, but it could become that an area becomes more sensitive, a species could become listed or delisted, and then that causes us to have to change or shift our approach with the project. And that, I don't want to speak to that may have happened in your project, but that's an example of what may have happened. Sometimes when we're looking at the design of a project as well, so we do our project development and environment study, and then we get into design, and for whatever reason, when design is refining that concept, they may find a less expensive way to establish that. Maybe there's some more better construction methods that are available, or for whatever reason, the design may shift and we may have different impacts. Well, in that case, we will re-engage with our agencies immediately and try to see how we can minimize really impacts to everyone, to the environment, try to see how we can help, you know, have the most cost-effective solutions possible. But that's kind of how it tends to work. That's the iterative part of the process.
Follow-up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, again, back to the bridge. It sounds like maybe I don't think it was the case where there was a new species there. I don't think it was the case where a standard changed. But what I'm wondering is if you were invited to the process too late, if there's something that we need to help change in the order of when you're invited into the process to do an impact study or however it's termed, so that we don't start down a design path that we have to redo. And we all know rework happens. I'm redesigning my kitchen right now, and rework happens. Sometimes it's unavoidable. But are there any points in, like, the playbook of when you join the planning process that we could change now that we are prioritizing environment in different and new ways?
You recognize.
I want to make sure that I would like to say there's two parts to answer your question. When we're doing projects that we're delivering on behalf of FDOT that are on the state highway system, or we are doing on behalf of a local agency, it's easier to integrate our process into that decision making. And we are working more closely. Actually, we're actively working right now to cross-train and cross-educate our design folks with our environmental folks so that they can both start to see those, I don't want to say red flags, but, you know, instances where they need to start to communicate with each other. So we're actively doing that cross-training. When we have instances where we are more assisting a local agency, it's more dependent upon when that agency engages with us. We try to make our resources available to them. We try to be as supportive as possible, as well as being respectful of them being their own entity. But one of the things that we are doing so that agencies feel more comfortable involving us in a process or using the resources that we have available if it's the locals that are more administering a project, is that we are now doing some statewide training through the local agency program with our local agencies to better explain not only the NEPA process, but these tools that we have available. And even with the turnover that's happening at local agencies, like with a lot of governmental agencies, we're trying to put that training and that information out there where it's more public, where you get new folks in and they can look at it. Then if they don't understand anything that we've said, they now have a resource to call and get more information. So hopefully over time, we'll be able to minimize some of this rework that you're talking about and kind of streamline more our iterative process.
Follow up.
What a nice chair. I think I might have found it. In Sarasota County, we're coastal, so we have a lot of environmental engineers on our county staff. MPOs, as far as I understand it, the dedicated MPO workforce, there's maybe like 20 to 30 FTEs on an MPO staff, depending on the size of the MPO. Are there environmental engineers on an MPO dedicated staff by design?
Recognized.
In some aspects, it depends on the MPO. Sometimes they're community planners. Many times they're community planners. When we are engaging with an MPO or a TPO to use the information that we have available, we actually go through a training process with them, explain all the layers that are available, and we have a help desk that they're able to call and get more information. If not only to get some access to some technical information, but also on how to use the actual GIS layers we have available.
That's tremendously helpful. Thank you.
Good. Other questions, members? Oh, I'm sorry, Yeskimani, you have a question.
I always have questions, Chair. Thank you so much for your presentation and just for your commitment to Florida's progress and our environment. A few questions. I first was hoping for an update. I know back in 2020, there was some concerns in Seminole County with the Little Wakaiva River. And residents were concerned about the sediment potentially coming from I-4, but, you know, FDOT provided other potential causes of it. I know the legislature allocated funds to help restore Little Wakaiva River. I'm curious if there's any updates on that, and also any lessons learned over the years from the impact of the construction project itself, because it's not even just, you know, the goal of bridging together environments, but also the potential impact of construction in general. whether it's the materials, noise pollution, air pollution. So I'd love, you know, some maybe more logistics on the construction process, if there's been improvements over the years to try to reduce the environmental impact of construction itself.
You're recognized.
I would have to get back to you, honestly, for the specifics that you've asked for the Little Wakaiva River project. But I can tell you that we are working very closely with our construction staff to make sure that we're very clear on what the environmental needs are, and we are continually improving, and we're actually been working with FHWA a little bit on this, on how we can make sure we're following through more consistently on making sure we're addressing those items in construction. So we are making some efforts in that regard.
Part B.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you for that. Shifting a little bit, I'm curious about what role does flooding play in any of your planning? And I only ask again because, you know, after Hurricane Ian in particular, we saw major flooding in inland areas in Central Florida. And so I'm curious, are you also analyzing, you know, flood patterns, flood maps when you're engaging in new construction or improvements? And have you seen patterns of, you know, roadways impacting the flow of water when we have extreme weather patterns?
You're recognized.
So that's a part of our whole resilience culture that we were talking about and the procedures and policies that we have in place. We do have additional flooding information, and we are continually adding layers of GIS information as that information comes available to look at how our processes work. But really, that's not just a planning function. We have to look at it across all of our phases. So we're being very collaborative as an organization on addressing these flooding issues to make sure that not only that are we looking at how we're putting projects out there, but how we're addressing them once they're out there.
And Chair, one more question, if I may.
One more question.
Thank you so much. I think it was, slide 10, but around the beginning of your presentation, where you outlined all the different variables into consideration around, you know, when you're working on a project, the community partners you're talking to, maybe it was before this one, don't remember, but the tribal community, the cultural dynamics. Perfect, thank you. Slide 7. I was just curious, you know, I love the efforts to reconnect environmental ecosystems that have been divided because of roadways and so forth. And this was mentioned a little bit earlier, but there's also the cultural environment of neighborhoods that have been split over the years, you know, prior to any of our time in service. And Edenville is actually in my district, the historic town of Edenville. And I-4, in its original inception, split Edenville in half. And so, you know, I was just in the Dr. King Parade a few weeks ago, and you tell the difference between the neighborhood setting of where you start before I-4 and then you get under I-4 post. And the same thing in Paramore in Orlando, west of my district. And so have there been any efforts, too, to consider the human cultural environment with new projects of how maybe we can also look at rebuilding connectivity among people, not just animals, but also people?
You're recognized.
Thank you. So it's very easy for us to have GIS layers as far as the animals go, but really our commitment to and community engagement is how we look at how we're going to meet the needs of whatever community we're serving. And how we're going to do that is we have to engage them and talk to them and talk through their needs. And if I may give a project example of what I mean, when I previously worked in the district, I worked on a project in Manatee County where a community had expressed to us that they had been previously bisected by a major state facility. And with the project that we were bringing in, it was a trail project that they wanted to enhance economic development that had previously been lost historically. And with that, we were able to collaborate with them on solutions that we could move forward with, on having vendors come in along the trail system, where the trail system would go so that people could help develop the, you know, with workforce development so that they could get to work, et cetera. And so really, when dealing with the human environment, that's a matter of making sure that we are talking to the communities where our projects are located and making sure that we understand their needs, their wants, their priorities, their culture, so that we can make sure our transportation solutions can meet them as much as we can. Of course, we can't fix everything, but we are making a very concerted effort, and it is a part of the way we do business to meet those needs.
And Chair, can I brag a little bit about some of the partnership in Orlando on this, if I can?
Sure, go ahead.
Thank you. Yeah. I just want to
15 seconds.
10 seconds. I just want to brag about some of the efforts of the Under I-4 project in Orlando for my colleagues to know. So we're in the process at a municipal level in partnership with all of our agencies to actually try to revitalize under the I-4 bridge that has divided communities and trying to add recreational activities and performance venue, even like an outdoor under I-4 performance environment for nonprofits to engage on and, you know, try to actually use that what is now just empty concrete and try to revitalize it as like a cultural space. So I just want to share that with folks too, as it is in process right now.
Yeah, thank you for that comment. I know if you go back and look at Secretary Perdue's presentation on the 17th, I think he talked about some of those elements and how he met with members of Paramore and how he tried to work through those elements with them. But as Mrs. Marshall says, that they don't try to just put gray space in areas, they try to make sure it's conducive to the communities as well. So Representative Mooney, you have a question.
Thank you, Chair. First of all, thank you for your presentation. It was really valuable. You know, I know that when you hear House District 120, and particularly Monroe County, you break out the antacid pretty quickly, I'm sure, with 42 bridges that you're dealing with down there. But, you know, and thank you for the roadway stabilization project that you basically have just completed throughout the Keys, which was a massive undertaking, by the way. But there's a small section there known as Sea Oats Beach. I don't know if you're familiar with that section. Historically washes out every storm. I've lived there over six decades. I will tell you that, unfortunately, what I'm seeing done there now is a Band-Aid, an expensive Band-Aid. But after seeing your presentation and seeing what you did in Titusville, was there any thought of doing any kind of wave abatement in that particular 1 to 1.5 mile stretch that would really enhance and solidify the shoreline stability there and the likelihood of the road washing away? Because you know when that road washes away, you've cut the Keys in half, basically, and that would be critical in a major storm. And that area is ripe for a project that thinks outside the box. And did you think about that project and that little stretch there at Sea Oats Beach? Because you have the ability to restore the beach, create a new environment, protect the road, and do some good. And if not, why not?
Ms. Marshall, you're recognized to answer that question. If you're, look, members, we all have specific things in our areas that may take a subsequent conversation, but if you have comments on that, please feel free to give comments.
Unfortunately, I don't have specific details on the project that you're mentioning, but I would be more than happy to take some more information and we could explore further so that we can get you the answers you've requested.
Do you need a follow-up? You good? Representative Buchanan, you had a question?
Thank you, Chair Payne. A comment and then a question, if I may. Thank you for the presentation, Ms. Marshall. You're clearly, this is something that you're very passionate about, and we can tell. And I also want to compliment Secretary Perdue. You guys have done a tremendous job in terms of outreach. Appreciated the time that we've spent a couple weeks together going over some of my questions. But we've also had, in our community, there's a lot of growth going on. River Road is something that we've been working on for some time, a long time coming. And there's been a number of constituent issues that have come up. Your team has been phenomenal as it relates to outreach. Every time we've reached out and a group wanted to get some questions answered or address an issue, you guys have been phenomenal. So we really appreciate that. I did have one question, and it's something Secretary Perdue and I, we had a conversation about previously. When we begin to think about whether we want to call it the wildlife crossings or under passages or ecoducts, I don't know, depending on who you're talking to, but when we begin to think about those, the construction of those, how in terms of quantitatively are we looking at success as it relates to metrics around public health, around public safety, around contiguous, keeping lands contiguous? How are we measuring success?
You're recognized.
And I just want to make sure I understand your question. It's just when we're looking at connectivity, making sure that we're
So upon completion, are we going back and are we looking at any metrics as it relates to accidents involved with animals crossing the road, other metrics as it relates to?
So that's some of the data that we're actually starting to collect in partnership with some of our other sister agencies in the state, but that's where a lot of our wildlife cameras are coming through, where we're seeing the usage of the wildlife crossings that we're putting in. The new and improved data that we have been working with it, that we've recently released in partnership with U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, it's based on some very strong science and input, again, from a lot of various entities, so that we have a much higher assurance that when we put in a crossing, that it is really an avenue that wildlife is using. And so we're also looking at other areas of technology where we can better monitor those areas of success, but also improve upon, because it's not just the crossing that's going to help us, it's other areas. So how can we continue to improve upon that safety?
Is there a Mr. Chair, if I may
follow up,
is there a certain set of quantitative metrics that you look at as it relates to success?
We are working with the other agencies to be more prescriptive in some of those metrics, but nationwide, there really isn't anything available. So we are looking at things for ourselves to measure our own success. And again, we need to do that with the agencies that really have more of the ownership of that kind of science and data. So again, I mentioned our relationship with U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service and the Florida Wildlife Conservation Commission.
Thank you for that. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Members, other questions? Seeing no other questions, you know, members, I think it's very satisfying and assuring to hear from the department and know when we look at the presentation we've seen, and we're concerned about resiliency and preservation and conservation and environmental needs and how they collide with a growing state in all transportation modal areas, that you're giving us the assurance that you're doing the right things, not only in the environmental space, but in all the other areas that affect those areas of conservation and resiliency and environmental needs, and then working with the community. So a great presentation. I just want to take just a moment to thank you personally, thank the Secretary for the relationship we've had, your staff, outstanding staff. You've always responded to our needs. You're responding to our needs for presentations and to engage and encourage our members to learn more about what FDOT does to the state, so we can be a sounding board for our members in the community. We know that each of our communities and each of our districts have our own concerns, but it's assuring to know that that we're seeing the opportunity to work with you and seeing the betterment for Florida. And again, Secretary, I know you've certainly had to bite your tongue a few times as you sat there. I could see some angst and a few questions that came, but we're supportive, and we're certainly supportive of the moonshot we're trying to reach with the additional financing for the state and how we move people around our state. So. With that, no other questions. Members, Representative Robinson moves that we rise. Without objection, we're adjourned. Thank you.